The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report, a sunny Thursday here in Southern California. Second of our two-part BS Report. If you missed part one, we had Bill Barnwell from Grantland.com talking about NFL over-under win totals. And now to talk about the NBA playoffs with Dave Jacoby. And I, hey, Dave Jacoby.
Hey, buddy.
Now to talk NBA playoffs, but first, NFL over-under win totals. Redskins fan Joe House, what's happening?
What is happening? Redskins fan Joe House live and in Washington.
The over-unders came out. We just talked to Bill Barnwell about them.
Oh.
What do you think the over-under is for your beloved Robert Griffin III led Washington Redskins?
Ooh. I'm going to say they're always expressed in half games, right?
No, not always. Not always.
Oh, interesting.
Can be full games.
8.5.
Oh. House was high.
Seems optimistic.
6.5. You could feel the optimism.
Yeah, you've been reading
prediction.
A lot about Robert Griffin III, haven't you?
Oh,
six
my
and
Lord.
A half?
6.5. Looks like House is going to the bank and taking out some money.
That was the Redskins last year were an 8-win team that underperformed. They slogged their way to 6. I mean, they had the talent to win 8 games last year.
I agree with House, and apparently, does Vegas agree with you? Oh, I haven't seen. No. Doesn't seem like that's moved that much. I agree with you. I think even a raw, not totally knowing what he's doing, Robert Griffin, is a significant upgrade at QB for them. With that said, I will take him in the QBO if he's available because I think he's going to have a lot of turnovers.
Of course.
And he'll probably get hurt a couple
because
times.
Because you watched a lot of Baylor football last year, right? That's what you're basing this opinion on?
I watched them SportsCenter highlights.
Okay, exactly. Yeah.
Saw him run around. I know that he's not a physically imposing person. He's an injury risk.
I disagree with you.
I thought he was like not that like huge. Like Cam Newton's like it would be surprising if he got injured. That Griffin was a little more of a scamperer.
I think he is a scamperer because he has world-class foot speed. He's a world-class track athlete, which I think factors, you know, quite precisely into the other direction. He's not an injury risk because he will be running out of bounds. I mean, the thing we'll know in the very first game of the season,
yeah.
I think, whether he's, you know, what direction he's headed in and what kind of coaching he's getting. By whether he you know runs and slides or runs and runs out of bounds or whether he runs into contact.
All right, let's talk NBA. I had enough of football. Football doesn't start for 4 months.
6.5. I'm taking the over.
You take the over. You're in on the over.
Big number on the over.
So my team had a chance to finish off the Philadelphia 76ers last night.
Yes.
They shot like 30% and made 20 turnovers, and Rondo bent over and he took a big fat dump at midcourt.
All those things
and we
happened.
Lost. And now game 7 is Saturday, and I'm supposed to not be worried because the Celtics are home and they allegedly have a better team. Meanwhile, like half the team is injured. You are a neutral observer. Do you think I should be worried?
A little worried. Not a lot worried. I think it would take a pretty remarkable set of circumstances and facts for the Sixers to actually pull out a road win under that scenario.
The odds are with the Celtics. It's like I think 6 or 7% for the road teams in a game 7.
I cannot erase the memory of last night when you asked that question.
You can't unsee it?
Fully worried. I mean, I think you're forgetting that the fourth quarter offense was Kevin Garnett 24-foot jump shots.
That's the whole offense is jump shots.
But it was Kevin Garnett exclusively. Ray Allen was nowhere to be seen. Rondo was. It seemed like he was a saboteur, you know, trying to go to Game 7.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think that's the good point here. How many times has Rondo stunk twice in a row with the chips down?
It's a good point. I tweeted last night that he's the new Roddy Piper. Every time I think I know the answers, he changes the questions. Well, look, I thought he was going to come up huge last night, and he played one of his worst games in a long time.
If this game is as it's possible, it's an 8 o'clock primetime Saturday night game,
yeah.
I expect a triple-double out of him that's like 25 points, 30 assists, and 22 rebounds. I mean, nobody rises to the occasion when he knows there's a national audience watching. You know, more so than that guy.
Well, what was last night of freaking? Man, what was it on the Lifetime
WSBK
Movie Network?
TV 38.
Last night was televised.
Yeah, but no. Last night, it's a different thing altogether. Saturday night primetime.
How about AI was in the house? He couldn't raise an indication for AI.
Yeah, he knew he was going up against American Idol, so he just turned it down a notch.
That's what I think.
I watched the game with Jacoby and a bunch of other people at my house, and when AI said that. When Lisa Salter said, "Hey, you've retired from basketball," and he's like, "No, I haven't retired yet." All of us wanted to start crying. It was so sad. It was like Dirk Diggler in front of the church. $20 if you want to see it. Like, come on, AI, retire.
I think he saw Ray Allen out there. He was like, "Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm not retired."
That's a good point. He's like, "At least I can cover
that guy." Yeah.
Well, look, if Gilbert Arenas can play on a team and get minutes in the playoffs. Certainly AI should have latched on with somebody.
I like the fact that he hasn't changed physically, appearance-wise, anything at all. He came out of a time machine.
Especially
he was wearing
in the
same outfit.
Yeah.
Same outfit he could have worn in 2001.
If his agent could have convinced folks that he's in a good place right now, like with his family and his head and everything, I bet he would have latched on somewhere.
Here are my fears in order with the Celtics, because people have been emailing me and asking how nervous I am. Number one, the no Avery Bradley thing is really hurt. And only the people that were watching this team day in and day out know all the stuff he did. He was really one of the best three or four defensive guards in the entire league. He got them a lot of cheap points on fast breaks, on little backdoor cuts. Him and Rondo had a nice thing going. He got them like 8 to 10 easy points a game, and he spread the floor because he could make corner threes.
What about defense?
His defense was great.
Yeah, I mean,
So to just remove him really hurts. Then Pierce with the sprained MCL, you know, Pierce, like last night would have been a classic Pierce game where he just would have said, "I got this." And he would have just started going to the line. I think he went to the line like 13 times anyway, but he's just not totally right. We'll see in game 7 how he's feeling. That worries me. The other thing is Ray Allen, like, I don't even know if he should be playing. I mean, I had a serious conversation yesterday with Hench, texting back and forth, like, are we better off with Sasha Pavlovic? Like, not even ironic. Like,
wow.
Really, are we better off with Sasha Pavlovic than Ray Allen limping around, being unable to do anything and can't guard anyone and can't walk? Like, at some point, you just have to kind of pack it in. So, you know, when it comes down to those Garnett and Bass 20-footers, which can stop going in at any time... unless Rondo's awesome, then it's going to be like a 71-70 type game with 2 minutes left, and that scares the shit out of me. I'm going to swear.
That's the scenario that it would take, you know, for the Celtics to be at serious risk. But I think a couple things gravitate against it. I think Rondo is going to have a great game. I think the 2 consecutive days of rest for Pierce. Is meaningful. And
good
actually,
point.
If they play at night on Saturday, it's almost like 3 days worth of rest. You know, like a full 3 days. And I just don't see the execution out of the Sixers. I mean, it was a pretty extraordinary... For as bad as the Celtics played last night, the game was still in doubt with 4 minutes left.
Yeah, if flipping around, thinking how Sixer fans feel... They should to get that kind of stink bomb from the Celtics, and you're barely leading with 5 minutes to go.
Can't make a free throw.
Yeah, it's a bad sign if you're the Sixers.
I think the Sixers have hit their ceiling. If I'm a Sixers fan, I'd be content, you know, with how the season played out.
It's a team that was going to lose to the Bulls in 4 or 5.
Yeah,
Right.
And lost game one by 20 points, and Derrick Rose blew out his knee, and then they took care of business, and they got to the next round, and now they're in game seven. That's a huge season for them.
I mean, Chris Ryan would take that, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yes. As a Celtics supporter, though, I think the Bradley thing has huge implications on the roadmap to a championship. Like, there was a while when the Pacers were up 2-1, and the Celtics were playing well. It was almost like, oh, okay, you get to the next round, you beat the Pacers. Like,
yeah.
Maybe this could be a thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then with no Bradley, it's like, I don't see the roadmap to a championship trophy.
Well, that's the kick in the nuts here, is that even if you win...
That's the thing, yeah.
I don't care if LeBron and Wade are 2-1-5. It's still two better than any five we could put up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever they get from Bosch, I don't think it's really going to matter because, first of all, the Celtics can't beat Miami if Pierce is playing on one leg, which it seems like he kind of is because he's their key guy. He's got to... It's not like he's going to beat LeBron, but he's got to at least make it so that it's a 10-9 round. And it's a 10-8 round if he's on one leg. So now you're putting all the pressure on Rondo to basically do everything possible. And we saw it last night. He's not that reliable. Ray Allen's, I don't think he's going to get better. KG's going to wear down. Mm. But the Bradley thing is such a murder. He was their young legs.
Yeah.
Hass, what do you think?
I think that if I expect the Celtics to win Saturday night, and I'm going to look hard at the odds for Miami getting a sweep in the next round.
Oh, wow. David Stern just laughed at you. David Stern's like, are you serious? I'm not going to have a sweep in the conference finals, Joe Hass.
Huh?
David Stern, he'll take care of one of the games for us.
That's a good point. I forgot about that.
Like our game five refereeing situation.
What about Pacers Heat, House?
Yeah.
So that's really the show here. I mean, it's taken on an intrigue that you couldn't have possibly expected. I think Miami is going to take care of business tonight because I think that Wade and LeBron have taken it up a notch, and I just think they're playing at a level that is untouchable by really almost the entire rest of the league. I love what Durant and Westbrook and Harden are doing, but when you see Wade and LeBron doing Wade and LeBron things these past two games, it's just a beautiful thing to see.
I have to we're taping this right now. It is 4:35 on Thursday in the game, East Coast time, and the game is starting in 3.5 hours. I really think that Indiana is going to win tonight.
Wow.
So for people who listen to the podcast, they're going to laugh when they hear that because they'll have already known Miami won by 20.
Yeah.
I think the Haslam thing was a huge injury, or a huge – removing him was huge for this game because I thought he was the reason they won game four other than LeBron's 40-19-12 or whatever he ended up with. But Haslam made those 4 15-footers, and I actually think they would have lost the game if he missed those shots. And my question is, if Indiana gives a comparable effort – to the effort they gave in that game, and it's a tight game in the last 5 minutes, and that shot's open, who takes it on Miami? Joe Hass?
Juwan Howard.
Yeah, but exactly. And it's the front of the rim and gets rebounded, which is why I think Indiana's going to win.
Let me tell you why I just hesitated, because as you were describing that scenario, I couldn't get my brain to think about Miami. I'm thinking, who in the hell on Indiana is going to take a shot if the game's tight with 5 minutes left?
David West.
Yeah.
No, come on.
Little Roy Hibbert. Do you know Tim Duncan's been like friends with Roy Hibbert? He's like been feeding him stuff. Tim Duncan's building up Roy Hibbert right now. He said, come on, Roy, biggest game of your career.
Well,
you're
going to
get paid this summer if you come up big tonight.
Because Larry Bird just called him soft. That was directed at Roy Hibbert.
Yeah.
That wasn't
directed
at any other player on that team.
He's 100% directed at Roy
Hibbert. And that's secretly why Bill thinks they're going to win.
Yeah,
I did. That's really why, because he believes this is like Larry Bird magic. Like, all he has to do is like call somebody soft, and like all of a sudden they're going to go on a streak.
Well, that was one of the reasons. I think the Haslam is my number one reason.
It's a great reason. Absolutely, positively agree with that analysis that you gave. I felt the exact same way. Those four jump shots, those four 15-footers that Haslam shot and made, were really did move the series. They moved the needle on the series.
They lose
totally
the series if he misses
moment.
Us. Yeah.
I totally agree.
They lose
but
the series.
I think that Miami is now kind of past that point to where the way that LeBron and Wade are playing, they'll be able to withstand the loss of Haslam in this game.
Can you explain to the listeners why it's overrated sometimes when players yell at each other on a court? I'll rephrase.
Teammates or opponents?
Like when Wade and Spoelstra yelled at each other.
Oh, there was nothing to that. That's heat of the moment stuff.
Well, I normally agree with you, but I wrote about this last week. The thing that worried me was the way that Howard and Haslam reacted, even as it was becoming a thing. They were already moving like it was like, oh, God, it's happening again. You know what I mean? There was no oh, my God, what's going on? Like watching it going, oh, this is weird. Like it was like, oh, like they were stepping in before Wade was getting mad, which I thought was interesting.
Well, maybe that you could attribute, you know, a half dozen different explanations to that, including the possibility that they knew that Wade took HGH that morning and knew he would be extra spicy, and they wanted to take the spice down a notch.
The views expressed by Joe House are not necessarily the views of Ray
Sanders or ESPN.
I love all HGH jokes. This happened in baseball. Derek Jeter was sitting like 420 right now. We would just make PED jokes. It doesn't mean they're true.
Wait, isn't that what's happening?
With who?
Jeter, isn't he hitting great?
See, now we're going to have to cut this whole thing.
These are all
jokes.
It's freaking me out.
These are all jokes.
They're jokes.
You know, it is weird, though, that they drain Wade's knee. And all of a sudden, I was playing well again. This happened to Kobe last year, too. They drained his knee, or 2 years ago. They drained his knee before the Phoenix series, or during the Phoenix series. And all of a sudden, he was great. Like, it seems to me like you drain your knee. First of all, that just sounds terrible.
I like it when you go medical on us.
Well, your knee has so much fluid in there that they're like, you got to go to the doctor. We're going to have to drain this. Like, it's like a clogged sink.
Yeah.
You have to pull all this fluid out. And
I don't know. To me, it sounds a little bit like, you know, relieving pressure. Like, oh, now I can move it around again. I got all that flexibility and that movement. That fluid was keeping, you know, was restricting me. Now the fluid's gone. I feel good. It's like he had blue knee.
Oh, interesting. Great job. That's funny. They should have sold the knee fluid on eBay. Quickly, LeBron. I don't want to overreact to that game because he was playing the Pacers. They're not the greatest team ever. At the same time, it was his best playoff game in 3 years. Game four, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I thought the thing that really made it important was that going into that game, he knew he had to have an awesome game, and then he had an awesome game, which I thought was a good sign if we want LeBron to get to where we want him to get as a basketball player from a historical standpoint. Did you feel like – did that game change how you felt about him at all?
It didn't change how I felt other than giving me – it was a validation feeling. Like, yes, you have this in you, LeBron. I know you do. I'm a LeBron lover. I mean, it's not a secret. I don't think I've ever equivocated or prevaricated. I think that he's the best player in basketball, and I also believe that he has in him, his DNA has, he has DNA that can make him the alpha dog kind of guy, take games over and win games. We've seen it before. They were in the finals. Cleveland went to the finals because of LeBron James 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So he can do this. I mean, this narrative about him being soft in the clutch, that emerged because of you know, the haterade that everybody drank after the preposterous decision thing.
Well, it also emerged because in key games in the last two seasons, he ran away from the ball and didn't touch it. I mean, his usage rate in Game 5 of the Dallas series last fall was like, it was by far his lowest usage rate ever in a playoff game. And it happened in the biggest game that he played.
As a fellow LeBron lover, I would argue that that is an occurrence and that is not a trend.
Okay.
You know, I think that this year, I think that that has not reoccurred. I would be concerned if that reoccurred this year.
House, as you know, LeBron has has the presidential suite at the Jacoby House. And he goes and he retreats there when the hate becomes too much.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who else?
Yeah, he doesn't need to be in there. It's just a retreat.
No, he just pays the suite, and he comes in every once in a while and stays. Who just joined the Jacoby House? There was a big one recently.
Lance Stevenson has been in the Jacoby House for some time now. He knows the entire staff. He's very nice to everybody. He tips very well.
One recommendation: don't put Dexter Pittman anywhere near Lance's room.
Pittman's not allowed. He's not allowed in the Jacoby House.
He's not good enough to be in the Jacoby House.
He's not good enough.
Is there any celebrity? Is like Amanda Bynes in the Jacoby House lately?
We haven't opened it up to celebrities yet.
Oh, it's just athletes.
Yeah.
Rihanna is making a move, I think.
Rihanna might be in the Jacoby House. There's been a lot of Rihanna backlash.
Don't talk about Rihanna that way.
You love Rihanna.
Absolutely.
Well, then she should be in the Jacoby House.
No, she does not deserve
it. When you open it up to celebrities, it should be.
I'll consider it.
Hmm. Now, there was another athlete that just joined. Oh, Josh Hamilton was nice when he stopped by in March.
Yeah.
He's been crediting that to his 18-homer binge.
He asked for the key to the minibar. We said no.
Quick three-day stop by. He regrouped, and now he's back.
He was good.
So you were happy with LeBron House.
Yeah.
It seems like you're just penciling in Miami.
For what?
You think they win the next five games, they make the NBA Finals.
I do think that, yeah.
Where San Antonio will be waiting for them.
I think that as well. That is what I think.
And San Antonio is going to beat Miami in the finals. And then everyone will talk about how a team triumphed over two individuals, and that's going to be the whole boring narrative that everybody's going to beat in the ground.
I'm not prepared to concede that last piece of the narrative. I'm not prepared to say that San Antonio will beat Miami.
I think we breezed over the Thunder Spurs too quickly.
You mean Oklahoma City, the team formerly known as the Sonics?
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah. I think we've breezed over the Zombie Sonics against the Spurs too quickly.
I think the Zombie Sonics, who they beat in round one? Dallas.
Yep.
A decrepit old Dallas team.
Yep.
And then in round two, they beat a decrepit Laker team that has terrible perimeter people other than Kobe.
Okay, but they have Kobe.
Now they're playing a real team that has a point guard who can do stuff, and Ginobili who can do stuff, and Tim Duncan who could score on guys, and guys who can make three. It's such a dramatic difference between what they had. I think it takes them like two games to adjust.
Yeah, I can't. The problem I have with Oklahoma City is I can't come up with the story that convinces me that they win. Like, what are the circumstances? What has to go well for them to win this series?
Yeah, they need like an awesome, awesome James Harden series.
Spurs three-point shooting goes cold. That's the only thing that I can see.
Yeah, I mean, that's right.
Injury, they need the Manu ankle sprain maybe.
Right, an injury. But outside of injury,
Spurs three-point shooting goes cold is the only thing I can see.
You know, people are talking about what a bad matchup it is. I mean, I'm going to play devil's advocate even though I think San Antonio is going to cruise. You could talk me into potentially a who covers Durant on this team angle.
Isn't the answer zone? That's what they did to CP3.
Yeah, but if you play a zone against Oklahoma City and they put Harden and Durant out there and they're shooting threes, then that's going to end pretty quickly if they're making them.
Well, it's the making threes. It's not the shooting threes. It's the making threes.
Yeah, if I'm – it seems like a series that Oklahoma City, from a coaching standpoint, could get super creative and make kind of interesting. Like, what about playing Durant at center for some stretches, making Duncan guard him, stuff like go super small
Duncan.
Ball.
They can go very small.
Yeah, why not, though? Like, try some different stuff. Make it so that San Antonio's going, uh-oh, what are these guys doing? This is what bothered me about how the Clippers went against them. Like, the Clippers didn't really try anything. Like, Spurs had a better team. We knew that in game one. Mm. All right, so mess around. Play Blake Griffin at center. Go big. Have Blake Griffin at small forward. You know, do some stuff. And it's just not – trying out the same stuff we did every other game. Oklahoma City, I feel like should at least experiment. Don't do what you did the last few rounds, because that's you're going to lose.
I was interested by the very first thing you said when we started talking about this, which is that it sounds like there's a prevailing sentiment that the Spurs are going to roll. Is that true?
Yes.
Wow.
They're 2-1 favorites, and after what they did to the last two teams, and I might be biased because of just seeing that in person. You went.
I did.
They're so good. They play so well together.
I don't see them doing that to the Zombie Sonics the way they did to the Clippers.
Because of the athletes?
Yes, and because of Ibaka and Perkins.
I think that's right. Mm. You said it with a more of a question than is necessary. Because of the athletes. You said it with a question mark in your voice. Because of the athletes? I would say yes, because of the athletes. They are the one team in the entire NBA that can throw athlete after athlete after athlete at you. And really, you know, create their own mismatch problems. The main point to me, the place where they fall down is the coaching mismatch. I just don't think Scottie's got it in him.
And piggybacking that point, what the Spurs did to the Clippers is basically, all right, what do these guys do well? Boom. Well, we're taking it away. Oh, you go to Chris Paul in the last 5 minutes? You're not going to do it this series.
Anymore.
Oh, Chris Paul likes to go right all the time? Sorry, Chris, you're going to have to go left. Oh, Blake likes to spin into traffic? Sorry, Blake, we're taking... And all of a sudden, the Clippers were just firing up threes, and that's all they had. And you look at this Oklahoma City team, it's like, all right, well, what do they like to do? They like to shoot jump shots. They like to shoot 20-footers. Okay. We're not going to let you do that. You're going to have to pass the ball to Kendrick Perkins, and he's going to have
on offense.
Score on Matt Bonner. Yeah, they're going to do things and make and put guys who aren't that good in the position to beat them.
The interesting thing, somebody mentioned it earlier, if James Harden and Russell Westbrook get to the rim, then it ratchets up the interest level to me.
The recipe is this. James Harden has to win one game by himself like he did in the last two series. He just needs, the James Harden
penetration
game. Just like, oh, my God, James Harden won that game. Then you need the Durant 47-point, holy crap, that guy's a good game. And then you need the Westbrook 39 points on 15-for-20 shooting that keeps them close, and then Durant wins, which is what happened in the last Laker game. And then I think they need an injury.
Then it's probably a plane accident.
And then Ginobili needs to have it. Ginobili needs to, like, tweak his ankle. I'm not even saying an ankle sprain. But I just – San Antonio's not going to lose game one. So then Oklahoma City would have to win four and next six.
I'm not ready to say that. I think there's something – what was the last close game that San Antonio played?
The last two Clipper games.
You know what I mean? There were those close, honestly – with 5 minutes left in the game, the Clippers were up. I'm writing you saying, well, it'll be at least the Clippers played hard. It was great. There was never those games weren't really in doubt.
No, they had to make plays though. Yeah. Also, like the baskets they get, it's just so easy for them to score. I've never seen a team get more layups. That's why I called them Layup City in my column. This is layup.
If you take away the layup, the corner three.
Well, it's layups inside of 2 minutes. That's the thing that's so compelling.
It's nuts. I'd love to see a stat on their layups versus everyone else's layups. And just and the easiness of the layups, you know? Like when you play basketball and you play that team, which happens to us from time to time, Jacoby, the team that just we get killed and they're getting easy shots, you're like, ah, this sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the Spurs. They just get easy shots. Even when they miss, it's a great shot.
If it's not a layup, Tim Duncan's guy helped and kick it up to him for like a 9-foot jumper that he makes with his eyes closed.
Yeah. I'm stunned by how good Kawhi Leonard got.
I don't know his first name.
No, I was going to say it. I had it. Kawhi Leonard.
I'm just going to call him Cowboy Leonard for the rest of the playoffs.
I saw him early in the season.
Marcy just calls him Kwame.
He couldn't shoot in the beginning of the season, and they obviously just worked with him and worked with him and worked with him and worked with him. Now he's pretty reliable.
Aren't we at the point now where any rookie that plays great for the Spurs, you just say, oh, well, right, because they just do the best by their players.
Yeah, Popovich is incredible. When he was doing that whole hack a shack on DeAndre Jordan to get possessions back when they were coming back in game three.
He almost fouled himself in one possession. He ran onto the court.
Vinny was just, he just didn't know. I actually felt bad for Vinny. It was like, I wanted to like throw a white towel on the court. Just end it for Vinny. Oh, Vinny's corner is giving up. It's over. But I'm really... A scale of 1 to 10, I'm like a 9.5 for the series as a basketball fan.
I'm 10.5. I'm over 10.
Super duper excited for it.
I don't understand how you guys can write off the Zombie Sonics that quickly and also say how excited you are for the series.
I'm not writing them off. I'm probably overrating the Spurs. I just would be shocked if they lost. I think they're that good. I don't think anybody's going to touch them this year. I think they're going to roll. I could see them.
Even odds, I wouldn't bet against them, but I could see this getting to a game seven and weird stuff happening.
I hope you're right. Nothing would make me happier than Durant, going to that next level and doing his thing. Like, I love that he made the winning three against the Lakers. House, I know you love that.
Of course I did. I loved that shot, and I loved how it ripped the net. You know what I mean? Whatever the kids are using, what are they calling it? Gas? What are the kids calling those shots these days?
Hershey was at that game, and he was all upset after because he thought the crowd seemed surprised that it went in. And he was like, are you kidding? Does anybody watch basketball? 50-50 that shot was going in. 50-50 minimum.
No.
Minimum.
Well, I love Hershey's enthusiasm, but Durant has not been 50-50 with that shot.
Well, but Yeah, I don't know. I thought he was going to make it when he was lining up. I was like, he's going to pull up in three and he's going to make it because he's Kevin Durant. I was surprised that he missed the one the previous game because he actually got a good look. It was a crazy three, but hey, House, quickly. Lakers, who would you trade?
Pow. I read somewhere, I'm not sure where, but I think it was on ESPN, this idea of Bosch for Gasol. An idea.
Bosch for Gasol?
I think that's a tremendous trade.
Well, that's pretty interesting.
I think it can happen? Win. Huh?
You know why it can't happen?
Why?
Because Bosch knows where all the bodies are buried. He was in on the decision, like when they were planning it a year before it was legal to even talk about it. Can't trade Bosch. Bosch has all the emails and documents.
Can I make a case against trading Gasol?
I don't think you can, but I'll listen.
Let me just throw it out there. I think you leave yourself thin in the front court if you're the Lakers, and you're relying a lot on a man who had a great season, who was mentally questionable, and physically, that was his first full season in the National Basketball Association.
Jacobs, it depends on who they get back. What if they get another big guy back? Then you're not thin in the front court.
But who is that, Scola?
Here's the problem. We might have to split this podcast into two parts.
Because
you're not going to believe this, but I have some opinions on
this.
Here's the problem. You can't have Bynum and Gasol together anymore because Bynum is now at the point of his career where he needs he needs to be in the low post.
Yeah.
And they had Gasol on the foul line, which is idiotic. He's not somebody you put at the foul line. You stick him near the block and he does Paul Gasol things. You don't put him on the foul line.
The reason for that is he's not that good of a passer. We've confirmed beyond a reasonable doubt that he just does not pass that well.
And it's not somebody who's like, oh, I'm going to face up with this 15-footer. He's a guy, he shoves his ass into somebody, he turns around, he shoots a jumper.
Makes an ugly hook.
Yeah,
that's
his game.
You know who is good at that 15-footer?
Who?
Chris Bosh.
Exactly. You're right. It is a good basketball trade. That would be interesting.
And then they sign Steve Nash and...
Miami does?
No.
No, Lakers.
The Lakers.
Can we talk about how bad
that just broke Bill's heart? You should have seen his face when he imagined Steve Nash in the purple and gold. He just got really sad.
It's going to be a great team. I think it'd be really exciting.
I hope that doesn't happen.
That's a championship team.
I couldn't root against Steve Nash.
Yeah, you could.
I'm going to have to move to Europe for a couple of years. Follow Italian soccer. Are you familiar with the intricate details of the Rahman Sessions trade?
I know that the Lakers gave up a first-round pick for it, didn't they?
They gave up their first-round pick this year.
That's insane, by the way.
And in 2013, Cleveland has a right to swap either their pick or Miami's pick, which they have, for the Lakers pick. So if the Lakers if the Lakers stink next year, like let's say Kobe gets hurt and they end up with like the 12th pick, the Cleveland could then swap Miami's pick, which would be like 28th, for that Lakers pick. So they basically traded a first round and a half for Rahman Sessions, who no-showed the playoffs.
Interesting.
That's a bad trade.
Cleveland did a great job.
Cleveland did a nice job with that trade.
They really did.
And yeah, they traded another first rounder to get rid of Derek Fisher.
That's crazy.
So they basically traded 2.5 first-rounders to turn Derek Fisher into Rahman Sessions, who might leave as a free agent right now. But, yeah, not good.
It resulted in a second-round exit in 5 games.
Yeah. I mean, the Laker fan would say, hey, it's not our fault. We should have gotten Chris Paul, and you should have.
That's true. The Laker fan would be right. Laker the other fan. Thing is, this Laker team had every I think the Gasol coming up short in the playoffs again is really the leading story here for them.
Okay. Here's my counter. I would, in a millisecond, trade for Pau Gasol. I think he was totally miscast on that Laker team. He had no point guard for most of the year. He had Bynum in his spot where he likes to be. He's playing with Kobe, who takes 25 shots a game, and he gets mad at him if he misses 2 shots. You put that guy on a different team, I think he has a huge year. I love Pau Gasol.
Those are all great points.
I don't have a good counter. Yeah, that's good.
Like, I hope the Celtics get Pau Gasol. I know they won't.
I don't see a way that happens.
Well, it's possible. We have the cap space.
I don't see it happening.
He looks so good in the green. His little weird beard. But that, I think
the Bynum Gasol thing just turns into the KG Gasol thing.
Oh no, KG's way outside. KG loves to take those.
Yeah, KG's 15 feet away. That's a nice combo, actually.
KG's a poor man's.
It'd be like you playing with Pau Gasol. You like being on the foul line. You and Pau. You guys would be a good team.
I don't think so.
No? I think they're going to flip Bynum for Dwight Howard. And I think that's the trade that has been destined to happen for a long time. And America will finally stop fighting it, and that will be what happens. Dwight Howard for Andrew Bynum.
It's a fair trade.
It's a fair trade. It's because Orlando's looking at 65 cents in the dollar for Dwight at this point because everybody knows he's leaving.
Yeah.
So you get Andrew Bynum, who made second-team All-NBA. He's the second-best center in the league. That's a fair trade.
Mm-hmm.
You're trading the first-team All-NBA center for the second-team
All-NBA
center.
Both teams would do it in a heartbeat.
Both teams would do it, I would think.
So the Magic, in retrospect, paid for the right to be on the hook salary-wise for Dwight so he could go get his knee fixed.
Or his back. That was his back.
The surgery. It was his back. I messed that up.
Dwight's been in L.A. the last couple weeks.
Huh?
He's been here the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Looking at houses?
I don't know what he's been doing, but I know he's been here for the last couple weeks. Staying in a hotel and enjoying the sunshine and thinking about things like, do I want to play with Kobe Bryant? What would that be like?
Well, what about...
Do I want that guy in my life day in, day out?
For the reasons that Gasol Bynum was a bad matchup, wouldn't Gasol Howard be a bad matchup? Bad lineup?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they would have to trade Gasol as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. What about Dwight Howard, Chris Bosh, and Kobe Bryant?
Pretty good.
You're reaching. I mean, you might as well throw Steve Nash in there, and then Allen Iverson comes out of the
stands. I didn't like when the Steve Nash Lakers thing. I have a feeling that if Miami doesn't win the title, that's where he ends up.
Miami?
Yeah.
Why would he choose Miami over L.A.?
Because if I'm Steve Nash and I've made $120 million over the course of my life and I've been living in Arizona and I'm near the end of my career and I'm thinking, like, what I want for my next team, and I look around and I just see the chance to play with those two guys and how they run the break and things like that, and where would I fit in that situation? I'm running the break with the two best wing guys, you know, as a combo in the entire league. And I can just stand there and make open threes, and that's going to be my life. And I'm going to be in Miami, and I can hang out with Shane Battier and go to movies with him. Maybe Udonis Haslem can come. We'll take him, too. We'll go to see the Avengers 3.
But not Mike Miller.
No, Mike Miller will be amnestied at that point. Mike Miller will not be in Miami next year. But if I'm Nash, that's the big win. What's better than that?
I could make a case for the Lakers. I know you just don't like thinking about it.
Why would I want to attach myself to Kobe Bryant if I'm anybody at this point in his career?
To win a championship.
I don't think he has it in him anymore.
Larry Bird disagrees with you.
I know he disagrees, but he got swept last year, and he should have been swept this year in round two. And he was playing with the second best center in the entire league and one of the top 20 forwards in the league, or top 20 players in the league, Gasol.
And one of the five worst. Well, no, that's a disservice to Ramon Sessions, but their point guard situation was an abomination.
I liked what Artest was giving them. I'm an unpopular opinion.
That's fine, but I don't think Kobe Bryant was the problem for the Lakers.
I don't think it was either, but yeah. I think he's going to be a year older than he was this year, and the last 2 years they were barely a contender.
But he looked great this year.
And he's going to be making like $25, $28, and $30 million the next 3 years, so you have no chance at adding anybody. That's your team. So why would I want to... why would I want to do that when I go to Miami and play with LeBron and Wade?
I kind of like Steve Nash with LeBron and Wade.
Yeah, of course. It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Just think about if you're Nash and you could go wherever you want and you could be like, oh, I could play with those guys. I could live in South Beach. No income tax. So every time I'll just stand in a spot and I'll just get to shoot wide open threes. Do you think I could shoot 50% of my threes I can make, maybe? Yeah.
Pretty
plus,
good.
He'll probably be able to help pick the next coach because Spoelstra's gone.
What if they win?
Yeah, I'm saying if they lose. About? If they lose the title, he's out. He's the fall guy. 100%
chance. I'm not disagreeing.
100% chance.
Yeah, I'm not.
No way he comes back.
I'm not disagreeing.
How about this? Phil Jackson.
Wow. LeBron, Wade, and
Phil Jackson wants to coach again.
You were going so hypothetical. Now you're layering hypothetical on top of hypothetical on top of hypothetical.
I know for a fact.
You have the Heat losing the championship, and then you have Steve Nash going to the Heat, and then you have Phil Jackson going to Miami.
I mean, there's
layers and layers and layers of hypotheticals
there. If the Heat loses.
I think the Heat are going to lose, and I think all this is going to happen. This is going to be great. Another tremendous NBA offseason.
I know for a fact that Phil Jackson wants to coach again.
How do you know that?
Because I talk to people who know things.
Okay.
And I know for a fact that he wanted that Knicks job. And I know for a fact that Jim Dolan didn't want any part of Phil Jackson because Jim Dolan doesn't like people who think they're smarter than him.
Hmm.
And Jim Dolan has a whole weird inferiority complex.
Deserve.
And Phil Jackson is way too smart, and there was no way he was going to ever deal with that guy. So he hired Mike Woodson, who is an average coach who has bounced around and is not the answer.
So if you're Phil Jackson and you're saying it's a fact you want to coach again.
It's a fact he wants to coach again.
What jobs are fit for him?
The Miami Heat. Phil Jackson follows the superstars.
Mm.
How about the Los Angeles Clippers?
It's his specialty. It's not just that he follows.
Why don't you shake your head? Phil Jackson goes to superstars. Chris Paul and Blake Griffin.
I just don't see that team plus Phil Jackson equals elite championship contender. You watched a lot of Clippers games. So did I.
If I'm Donald Sterling and I could have Phil Jackson for 3 years for $30 million, I have Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are free agents a summer from now.
It's a great move for Donald Sterling.
I basically guarantee that those guys will stay on my team.
If you have Phil Jackson as coach, yes.
I freaked the Laker fans the F out that I hired Phil Jackson. I've gone from Vinny Del Negro to Phil Jackson.
And Phil does like L.A., right?
Phil gets to stay in L.A., could stay with his girlfriend. He gets to wave a big fat middle finger at Jimmy Buss, who he hates. He gets to go, hey, Jimmy, hey, and take over the Staples Center.
And then you know who coaches the Heat, right? Jerry Sloan.
Yeah, I think that too.
Well, you can make a case Jerry Sloan makes the most sense for the Clippers out of anybody because it's Malone Stockton again.
Yeah.
He just does Malone Stockton with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. It's like, hey, I've coached this exact situation before.
What makes you think Vinny Del Negro won't be back?
I'm pretty sure if Vinny was going to be back, I think they would have said so. The other guy that's out there is Jeff Van Gundy, ESPN and ABC Zone.
He's been out there for all these years now.
I think he's going to be back, though, this year.
He's really out there.
I think he's really out there this year. Okay. The only thing that we know for sure is that he won't be the Miami coach because of what Riley did to Van Gundy.
Yeah.
So cross them off. I wouldn't cross the Clippers off.
I would like Jeff Van Gundy in Washington.
Oh. Well, who's your coach now?
The interim guy, Randy Whitman, who did a good job. I don't know why you're laughing.
Is that why you like Jeff Van Gundy?
Yeah. Huh?
Isn't that Don Draper?
It's funny that made both of us laugh.
Yeah. Don Draper's coaching the Wizards.
He did a decent job.
Randy Whitman.
I don't. There's no word on whether or not Washington's going to re-sign him.
We got a wrap-up pass. My producer and co-host Dave Jacoby just gave me the wrap-up sign.
It wasn't the Lance Stevenson choke sign, right?
No, it was not the Lance Stevenson. So we're going to cut this into two parts. If you missed part one, Bill Barnwell talking NFL over-unders, and then this was part two, and we will be back with the BS Report next week. I hope you enjoyed an hour and a half of rambling, joking, conversation. My pick tonight, the Indiana Pacers, to beat the Miami Heat. See you guys.
Good luck.
Thank you. Take it easy, buddy.
I get to set off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.